Good morning and happy St. Patrick's Day. I don't know all that much about St. Patrick's Day celebrations, but I gather that even devout observers of Lent are known to take a break, if not on all Sundays in Lent, certainly on this feast of St. Patrick's, especially when it comes to abstaining from alcohol. And indeed, much of St. Patrick's Day poetry reflects that welcome relief, with sometimes rather far-fetched justifications like this one. When we drink, we get drunk. When we get drunk, we fall asleep. When we fall asleep, we commit no sin. When we commit no sin, we go to heaven. So let's all get drunk and go to heaven. There is a certain compelling logic to that. But more than just mere festivities, the story of St. Patrick, a 5th century Romano, British Christian missionary and bishop in Ireland, reminds us that the very tragedies of our lives can be turned around for good. According to St. Patrick's own declaration, he was captured at the age of 16 by Irish pirates and taken as a slave to Ireland for 6 years before escaping and returning to his family and to Britain. He became a cleric and eventually returned to Ireland as a missionary and converted many to the Christian faith. Now, granted, some historians doubt the veracity of his accounts and suggest that he might have invented the bit about the slavery and escaped to Ireland to avoid charges against him. Be that as it may, his devotion to Ireland and the gospel message appears undisputed, and he is celebrated as the patron saint of Ireland. By going to Ireland, St. Patrick conquered his fears and found purpose and meaning for his life. In Luke's gospel reading, the one we just heard, the Pharisees were, whether well-meaning or not, we can't tell, are a lot more cautionary. Get away from here, Jesus. Herod wants to kill you. Their warning is completely justified. Herod had already beheaded John the Baptist. Who would be next? You can almost smell the fear. But Jesus and his followers continue on towards Jerusalem. He is clear about his direction, his mission, and he is aware of the cost. He replies to the warning by talking about animals. First about a fox, then a hen. Now, to call Herod a fox, we have to understand, carried a very different association for his hearers than it would for us today. Far from implying that King Herod is cunning, clever, or manipulative, although he may well have been all these things, calling him a fox is the ultimate insult. And it is absolutely intended like that. In Hebraic sayings, foxes were often juxtaposed with lions. Good rulers and outstanding teachers of the Torah were compared to mighty lions, whereas inferior, worthless rulers and scholars were likened to foxes. It was an utterly derogatory term, deliberately used to belittle and to discredit. In one simple word, Jesus cuts Herod down to size, you might say, and with him the threat and fear the Pharisees are spreading. He is not disturbed. He does not change his plans. He remains utterly focused. So much for the fox. But what about the hen? Jesus compares his own relationship with Jerusalem to that of a mother hen trying to gather her chicks under her wings. Now, my grandparents kept chickens until I was 4 or 5, but admittedly, I had to resort to Google to actually observe a hen gathering her young. It struck me that the hen does not go and collect the chicks. It may call, but it's up to the chicks to come and crawl under her wings. And some come more quickly than others who prefer flapping about. Once under the wing, in the darkness, cooped up with the other chicks, they sense the warmth of the mother hen and her heartbeat. A powerful picture of intimacy, community, and being held in an embrace of rest and complete trust. Now, I don't know about you, but after thinking about death threats, lions and foxes, any talk about a hen and her chicks is not very reassuring. It's true, a hen can offer some protection from birds of prey, yet this is hardly a picture of reassurance and safety in a world of foxes and lions. It's inevitable. They will kill the hen one way or another and then go for the chicks afterwards. It may shock us, but Jesus' concern is not safety, either his own or the chicks. His real concern and sadness is for their unwillingness to be gathered, to be close, and to trust. Jesus seems to be suggesting that the real threat is not the fox or even death itself, but the chicks' own reluctance to abide under his wings. He is lamenting over Jerusalem because the people turn to their national identity, their prosperity, their magnificent city of Jerusalem for safety. But these are not enough. Within years, Jerusalem would be destroyed. Edith Cavell, the British nurse and spy credited for helping hundreds of Allied soldiers escape from German-occupied Belgium during the First World War, reflected on her lack of fear, the finality of death, and the limits of patriotism. On the day before her execution by a firing squad, she said this: "I have no fear nor shrinking. I have seen death so often that it is not strange or fearful to me. But this I would say, standing as I do in view of God and eternity. I realize that patriotism is not enough. I must have no hatred or bitterness for anyone." In a week when we particularly pray for the victims and families of the mosque shootings in New Zealand, all in the name of fanatical ideology and hatred, we do well to celebrate the example of St. Patrick, who returned to the very nation which once enslaved him, to tell them about the love of Jesus. And we do well to examine our own hearts, to check where our loyalty, our security, our trust is placed. We are called to let go of fear, of all bitterness, of all hatred. Because like St. Patrick and Edith Cavell, we are meant to be free. Free to trust, to love, and to forgive. Amen.